Mr. Fred Watson, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Watson?
Yes, I was born in Findon on the 28th of October 1922.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
My father was a poultry farmer, and he, just after the last 1418 war, and the farm he sort of started went bankrupt, and he took a job on an estate up near Forest here, about 10 miles south, called Dunfale. So he worked as an estate worker there, and of course the family moved up. I had a brother, Billy, and he died of appendicitis in 1940, before they had invented penicillin or used penicillin.
So you moved from Findon up to around Morris?
Up to Dunfale.
Dunfale.
D-U-N-P-H-A-I-L. And my father was an estate worker during all my time there. And we lived in a cottage called the Beachans. B-E-A-C-H-A-N-S. And I went to school.
How many were there in the family? Was it just you or...?
Just me and my brother, Billy.
That was it, the brother that died.
And then he died.
What... Were you reasonably comfortably off, or was it hard going?
Well, it was hard going while we were in Findon, because my mother once told me that the only food she had in the house the day I was born was a kipper. And her grandmother lived in Findon, both my father's mother and my mother's grandmother, who had moved up there near her in a cottage called Riverview. And that's my father's back memories, is of her and the funeral, because the bedding was wrapped up in a sheet outside the door, and I asked what was in the sheet to my mother. I'd have been about three or four at the time, four I think, and she said, I've asked where my grandmother was, and she said, oh, she's gone to heaven. And the sheet was apparently covering the bedding, which was going to be disposed of. So that was told to me by my mother, many years later, of course.
Now, what about your education? What schools did you go to?
Well, I went to Dunfale Public School. Well, first of all, I went to Findon when I was four and a half. My father, at that time, had a poultry farm, which went bust, really, because he was sending his produce to London. The carriage was more than the value of the ducks and other produce he sent. So he got a job and as an estate worker up in Dunfale.
You mentioned. What about your education there?
I went through the primary. I remember the teacher was Miss Alexander, followed by a Miss Lunan. And then I went to the other side of the same school, but the more advanced side, where you went and had to compete at the age of 10 and a half to 11 to get into the secondary school at Forest. And a bursary was given. There were four bursaries, 24, 22, 20, and I think 19, I think was it. These bursaries were given by the Manson Bequest. It was a man who left money for these. And on the interest of that money, they paid these bursaries. Now, the county, all paid the cost of the bus fare, which was £7.10. Now, in addition to that examination, which was taken here in Forres, covering the whole of the local schools in the county. I could name some of them: Rufford, Logie, Half Dabbagh, Glenfairness, but there are a few, Findorn. We all competed, and I got the top one, which was £24. I also got the Logie Medal, which was a bequest from a gentleman who left, who was a school teacher in Logie long ago, beginning of the century, and he left money for a medal. I've got them there. In fact, my brother got it much later. I'll show you them. So I came down. The examination was in Forres, in the school, a big, and all Findorn, all the local children who had gone to the secondary part of the, you know, the pre-secondary, what they called the qualifying, from Findorn all round, and I came top of that. So because of that, I went, my bus was paid, but part of the Manson bequest paid for the bus of those who hadn't got a prize. £7.10 was the fare to cover the year, you see. They've eventually run out of money. But so that covered all those who had qualified in marks and weren't going to continue at the school until 14 and leave and become farm labourers, something like that. So that's how I went to Forest School.
And how did you do there?
Well, I was keen at that time, you see, the prospects for work in the area were not in the academic field. I wanted to go to sea because all my uncles were sailors and my grandfather had been a whaler in the old sailing ship days. He was a very old man when he died. And I was a very young person. I used to listen to him. It was all adventure, you see. And I was determined to follow the sea. So instead of going into the A classes, which I was qualified, I went into the B class, where there was more of a practical. Yeah, of course. But the B would consider quite academic these days. I mean, you still got maths and English and all that, and one language and so on. French. So I stayed there at the age of 15, and of course war was looming.
That'd be 1937, late 1937.
Having decided that I was going to follow the sea, and then my uncle was on the Blue Funnel line. My uncle Duncan, he lived in Findorn, came from Findorn, and he sailed on a Blue Funnel ship, various ships, and he would come home and with rather exotic objects from Japan and things like that, and that fired my imagination, so I decided that I would go for the sea, and consulted him, and he said, well, some of the lads who come on the ship, he said, start off as deck boys and they go to the Gravesend Sea School in Kent, which is subsidised by the merchant navy companies who recruit from there because the young chaps coming on, apprentices and so on, get a background of training. So I went, wrote there, and then went down there and did the course.
Now, what do you remember? So you went down there in, what, early 38?
Yes, I think it must have been.
And what was the course? Was it a course, or were you sent there for a year or so? I mean, how long was it?
Oh, no. how long was it? It wasn't a, it was a course. It wasn't, it was a residential course. It was very, more like Borstal than anything else, I think. You did everything at the trot, because they were all ex-naval petty officers, instructors, or teachers who taught you maths, navigation, and sailing. Because the prime object was to prepare you for sailing a lifeboat if in the event there were no officers there to take command of it. And so you had little models in the windows from here and so, how would you get to there, and what course would you steer, and compass reading, and also the old, you know, semaphore, Morse. And it was pretty strict. You had, you did everything almost at the double. You know, you never walked. And the petty officers, ex-naval chaps, and they used to carry in their pocket the rubber sealing of a porthole, you see, in the pocket. And if you were a bit lazy about things, they'd whack you around the legs with this rubber. So that was...
How did you like that?
Well, we were two to a cabin. It was all very clean. In fact, I went back to see the place some years ago with my son down in London. I said, let's go see if it's still there. So we went out to the Gravesend place where it was, and it had been bombed during the war. And all that was left of the building was the brick surround, you know, it had been flattened. And we went down to the jetty, and where we used to practice lowering a lifeboat, where there were two davits, there was one rather crooked davit left. And we did rowing, and we competed with other training schools, the Prince of Wales Training School. And we went out to they had a frigate, the Triton. And we went out to the Triton rowing, and we rowed whalers, you know, and competed against others, the Prince of Wales, I think it was called, Sea School, in races on the Thames. And this Triton was an ex-paddle steamer. And in the paddles were the toilets. There was no paddles, but they were used as a toilet. And the regime was very strict. But
what were the living conditions like? You started to say there were two to a room.
And there, of course, when you went to the ship, you stayed in a hammock. Hammocks, and the next time I came across hammocks was on the troop ship going out to
Anything else about the Gravesend Sea School? Was it Sea School or Sea Training School?
Just the Gravesend Sea School. There was an article in the paper describing it. I think I cut it out a lot years ago because there was another establishment much the same. And they both had a similar way of dealing with, for example, you had a cold shower every day. And there was one boy with a bucket of soft soap at the door as he went into the showers. And as he came past, he had a dish. As he came in, he tipped this over your head, you know, from its slime. And then he went into the showers. Washed it all off. So it was a pretty rugged sort of breaking in. Everything was done by a bell. That's just to get you used to the bell. And the first attempts, of course, there'd be bang, 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 you know, until you got confident to use the right, one bell, two bell, so on. So it taught you the time by bell, because that's what happened at sea.
Did you enjoy it? I mean, overall, I mean, you've been keen on the sea. This was training for it.
But I don't think anybody really enjoyed it. You endured it, I think, to some extent, because the food was not all that. It was substantial, but not very appetizing. And the last meal at night was one slice of bread and dripping. Doorstep, what bread and dripping, and a mug of Bovril or cocoa, or a very watery lemonade. It wasn't the fizzy stuff, it was just juice with water in it. And that was your supper. So bread and dripping and watery lemonade or Bovril or something. So that was your supper.
And how long did the course last for?
I think it was 2 months or 3 months, I'm not sure.
So early 38 still. Yeah. And what happened then?
They reserved the right to send you to a shipping line. And the shipping line I went to, you were given a ship to go to. And the ship I was sent to was a Cork Line tramp steamer called the Framlington Court. I have a photograph of myself taken alongside the lifeboat with the name Framlington Court.
Now, where was she based?
Well, she was based anywhere. She was a rusty old tramp steamer. And the Cork Line had a lot of rusty old tramp steamers.
What was it? Can you describe? Because people don't know what a tramp steamer is now. I mean, it's all changed, hasn't it? What basically did she look like?
Rusty old bucket. She was called. What was it now? No, she wasn't a three island ship. She was. Yes, she was. She had a high poop deck, high forecastle, and in between the bridge and two holds. And she did, at the very best, with the wind behind her, 8 knots. And she was based in London. And I and another two chaps, because I know why they recruited from there, because I don't suppose they could get anybody else to go on a ship. And she was in a dock in London, and we headed out. She had a cargo of... No, she wasn't a big appearance, she was in London. She was in Cardiff in Wales, because we had to get warrants to take us there. And we took our bedding, which was a donkey's breast, straw in a mattress. They give you a mattress, and in that room was a pile of straw, fill it up. And we had to carry these in the underground. I remember being very embarrassed going through this donkey's breakfast, as we called them, on our backs. And we went to South Wales, and the first welcome we saw of the ship was alongside, enveloped in coal dust, and wagons of slack were being tipped with the cranes into the holds. And of course, as it dropped it, there was this cloud of black dust over everything.
Was this the fuel or the cargo?
This was the cargo. It was part of both, actually. But I think the fuel was slightly better than the rubbish we were putting in there. And so everything was covered in coal dust. And I remember we had to go up a ladder to get to the deck, because the ship was light and she was way up above. And I had my case, and there was another chap joining us from the sea school. He came down, an Irish fella. And he took my case up and dropped it. So my case went bang onto the quay and split open. So that's what I remember. Anyway, I got it together and up the ladder. And we were up in the bows of the ship. There was split, and the first once we got out, one of the jobs we had to do was to go down where the anchor cables went, and as the anchor, you had a hook, as the anchor cable, rusty, wet and mucky, came in, you hooked it and pulled it over here and hooked it so that it didn't pile up, you see. That was one of the jobs you got.
Now, you were joined as a boy seaman or as a seaman?
A boy seaman.
And what was your mess deck?
Three of us.
What was your mess deck like?
Well, it was just the three of us. And the floor sloped like that, and the table sort of sloped with it. And our bunks were here.
Bunks, not hammocks?
Bunks. And you put your donkey's breakfast in there, and there were hooks on the wall. And I remember this, there was an Irish chap from Belfast, and there was a Welsh chap. That was the three of us, three boy seamen, and we bunked there. The other crew members were next door in a much bigger place. I remember the Irish lad had a suit which he hung up on the wall, his best suit, you see. And of course, with a ship, she rolled all the way, rolled. I mean, she wasn't stabilized or anything, she rolled all the way. And when I came to take the suit down, there were holes worn in the back, rubbing on it. It was terrible. So, here we are. However.
And what were your duties? I mean, you mentioned the anchor, but when you got going, what were your duties?
You on the top of the bows of the ship, you stood a lookout watch, and there was a bell there, and that bell you doled out the time, and you got it from the bridge, because when you were on the you did wheel turns, you see, and that was a tricky thing until you got used to how much you could put on and take off. And you just, once you started moving, you had to stop her, because once you went going, it took a bit of stopping, you see. And I remember the mate, he says, I don't, you look back at the wake, and he says, are you trying to write your name in the wake? When he saw you using too much wheel, you had to, for example, if you had the wind, which had a big effect on the slab side of the ship, you had to put on maybe half a ton of wheel to keep her from going off, until you knew exactly how much, you know. But as you handed over, you would say half a ton to port, or half a ton to port, or starboard, depending on what you had discovered when you were steering it. When you weren't doing that, you were on the bows of the ship acting as lookout. And if you saw a light to port, you gave one bang on the wheel. This was to draw the attention of the mate on the bridge. If it was coming from starboard, you bang, bang. And he replied that he'd heard it by just ting on the bell. Because above the wheel, there was a bell. And the bell knocked out the time. You know, because behind was a chart room with the clocks, you know, for navigation. And you took your time from that.
So you could be on the wheel or lookout. What other duties would you have?
Oh, chipping rust with chipping hammers.
What was that like?
Oh, brilliant, terrible. Chipping rust. When you were at sea, of course, you couldn't do anything over the side of the ship. But when you got into port, they put you over on scaffolding and you, well, just planks and ropes. and chipped and painted it with red oxide, and then the colour of the ship. They had yellow funnels with black tops, a court line. And there was a Flamington court and a Kensington court and various other.
Did you have to do cleaning ship as well, you know, for the decks and so the rest of it?
Oh, the bosun used to come out with a hose and hose everything. They had hose points, and the hoses were thick canvas things. So he came out and washed all the ship clean when the coaling was finished. Then you put on the hatch covers, and then you put on two tarpaulins, and then round the edges you put metal rods, or metal battens, and put wedges in to keep it down. Because when she was fully laden, you're only a few feet above the waterline, you see. So once she rolled in a heavy sea, the seas came right across you. Then we had to rig lines between our quarters, the rails going up and the bridge deck, and make your way along, hanging on to the line, because otherwise you'd be washed over the side, see, in really bad weather, because, she was fully laden, there wasn't much freeboard, and the water used to go through the vents at the side.
What about, were you seasick at all, or...?
Not very much. I was a bit queasy occasionally, but it didn't seem to bother me much. I think a lot of seasickness was psychological, I think. You know, if you determined you weren't seasick, you weren't.
Were the other boys?
No, I can't recollect who they were. Well, they might have been, but I mean, we were on different watches, and you only saw them when you were having a meal, and it was blooming primitive.
Well, the food?
Oh.
What was it like?
Well, the first job I got when I went aboard the ship, this is pertinent to it, was emptying brine barrels, where the meat had been in brine barrels. And this was the lazarette. That was the steward's store, the cook's store. And we were heaving them up to empty the ice and brine out, empty the barrels. They would be returned to the ship chandler, and he would get full barrels back. So it was meat preserved in brine. There was no fridge. No fridge in these tramp ships. And did it stink? So you tipped that out, and the chandler supplied barrels of new meat. Tough as old boots. It was just a scrug end of any animal, I should think. And preserved and bright. And that was it.